You're listening to Dragonroot Radio on CKUT. Today on Dragonroot, we're going to speak with a local Montreal artist, Harpy. Harpy's work focuses on gentrification in Montreal, and she'll talk about her controversial Fuck Yoga, Smash the State piece. But first up, a musical break.
This was the track Try to Be from Blue Hawaii.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Welcome to Dragonroot Radio, feminist-inspired radio brought to you by CKUT and the 2110 Center for Gender Advocacy. The Dragonroot has two genders and symbolizes the diversity of every body and every mind on the gender spectrum. Tune in every Tuesday morning from 8:39 on 90.3 FM or ckut.ca/listen. You can also pick up and choose from our archives at center2110.org. We bring you reports from the Blueprint Radio Project on gendered violence, live tunes from feminists, queer, trans, and gender-aware musical guests, and interviews about a wide array of social justice issues examined through a gender perceptive lens. Today on Dragon Root, we'll be talking with Harpy on gentrification in Montreal, but first up is a Toronto-based illustrator with a fascination for sumo wrestlers and dirty jokes. Here's our chat with illustrator Nestle.
Well, I just recently graduated, so I'm trying to get it all off the ground right now. But I'm currently just doing a lot of shows and, trying to keep busy.
Cool. So you recently were at Poose Pop. How was your experience with that?
It was really fun because I've never, that was the first time I like traveled to a show. So it was very interesting driving the 6-hour drive from Toronto to Montreal. But the people were very friendly considering my French was super bad and disgusting. Like I had to write down on a cheat sheet, like how to say numbers and like hello and everything. So I was glad they bared with me.
Oh, that's great. So can you talk a bit about your illustrations, maybe certain themes that your art kind of revolves around?
A lot of my art revolves around like Asian themes, I guess. I draw or paint a lot of sumo wrestlers. It's kind of an obsession. I'm not sure why. I think I'm really fascinated by like Japanese culture. I'm not Japanese myself, but I think I just like sumo wrestlers because they get to eat whatever they want, and it's kind of like a sport. And they're worshipped, and they get to fight, and they look like chubby with awesome hair, and they have like a good life that I want. Yeah, and I don't know, a lot of Asian themes. I just mainly try to be very conceptual and funny. I like to think I'm witty and a little like dirty humor and whatnot.
Right. I noticed when I went to Peace Pop, the sumo wrestler under its like, I don't know if it's underwear, if you call it, but it had like popsicles and candy.
Yeah, I like to make a lot of plushies, and I just thought it'd be fun to put like, because originally I was going to try to sew in some private parts and it didn't really work out. Yeah, so I decided to just kind of paint a little surprise down there for anyone who's curious enough. Yeah.
So can you talk a bit about maybe along this line your use of humor in art? So why do you choose to go that route?
Because it's the route that like I understand the most, and I think what interests me. Sounds so selfish, but like that's just what got me to art, getting like making that connection, and I just found that connection in humor. And I feel like humor like really gets people together, kind of like puts us all on common ground. When it's so serious, sometimes some people wouldn't really understand unless they were in those shoes, kind of thing. Right. So, I don't know, humor is just fun. It just makes the whole, everything fun, making it, painting it, describing it, showing it off.
Yeah, so going back to kind of the, you said on a lot of Asian themes. Do you specifically do, like, a lot of Japanese stuff, or is it just Asia more broadly? And why do you choose to focus on that theme?
More on the illustrations I do that are more, like, lighthearted, are more kind of Japanese-y and like sumo wrestlers and whatnot. The more conceptual and serious ones are kind of based on, it was really personal, the series I did, and it was just based on my life as an Asian, living around Asian people, but not really, because I don't speak Chinese, so it was just really, it's like segregation within segregation. Like I couldn't really connect with the people around me, but they were the same kind of people I was in a way. We were all like Asian, we're all Chinese, but like just that experience growing up not really fitting in but fitting in at the same time.
Right.
That was kind of the more the Asian themed works I've done that was more serious.
Okay.
Yeah,
I noticed there was one of the paintings you had at Peace Pop was of a banana. And can you talk a bit about that piece?
Yeah, that's like, I call that one the self-portrait. It's a banana and like one side is peeled down and there's a face supposed to look like my face. I don't know if it really did that. But it was supposed to be a self-portrait of me as a banana because I'm yellow on the outside and like face-wise, appearance-wise, skin color-wise, but white on the inside. Yeah, because I grew up like not really so traditional. Like I wouldn't watch the Chinese shows and stuff that the people around me kind of talked about, and I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't know, I'd watch like the normal things like Power Rangers and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, and just like the way I think, it's not really, it doesn't really level with my friends that are more like traditional thinking. It's just kind of out of the box, so I feel like I'm not really, more like whitewashed, if you'd like to say that.
So do you think, or to what extent do you think your work speaks to that? How do you try to show that in your illustrations?
Well, just based on like different levels of like contact I've had with separation within my own like culture. Basically, pretty much just growing up, how do I portray? I portray it with like humor, kind of contemporary or visual twists, I guess. I don't know. That's a good question.
A tricky question, I know.
Kind of just happens, you know.
So, yeah. do you have any? You're based in Toronto, am I right?
Mm-hmm, I'm based in Toronto, yeah.
Okay, do you have any shows coming up or anything for listeners to check out?
Oh, yes, I do. But I have a show coming up in Toronto, though, the Toronto Outdoor Exhibition. It's in July 5th to the 7th. It's kind of like a lot of different artists. Like, they pitch up a 10x10 tent and sell their works and stuff. So I got that. I'm going to be selling my plushies, merchandise, sumos, and illustrations, too. And then I have the one-of-a-kind show. Yeah, it's just, like, this super big craft show of, like, handmade goods. I have I'm part of the Christmas one. And that's also in Toronto, too. I don't know if one-of-a-kind goes to Montreal. Other than that, that's all I'm doing, just promoting my illustration and making a lot of sumos.
Yeah, actually, going back to that, I noticed at your table at Poose Pop that you had not only illustrations, but, like, plushies and little paper mache things. So I guess, like, why did you choose to use multiple kind of venues, like, materials? And does that better express your work and your concept?
Oh, I have, like, a secret desire to be, like, a professional, like, ceramic artist. Like, although I don't use ceramics, I like to be really hands-on and make 3D works. Like, I think it's also because going to school for 4 years, just painting and illustrating, everything's like flat 2D. I think I'm just really getting it out of my system now, now that I'm graduated, like making 3D stuff. I just find it so fun just to make something on your own and kind of making your illustrations come to life.
Is there a website or something listeners can find you at?
Yeah, www.nessle.com. So that's like NESSLEE.com. Or they could like my page on Facebook. Thanks for having me on your show.
So can you tell me a bit about your work and how you got started?
Okay, well, how I got started, there's the serious story and then there's the funny story.
Okay.
The funny story is that I was at a birthday party for a friend and we were brainstorming for an imaginary punk band, which never really happened. But one of the ideas that we talked about was having some sort of a postering campaign in the streets and putting up, you know, critical artwork and, you know, trying to engage in some sort of a dialogue with people. The serious story, actually, I realized recently that the reason why I went to the street was because I didn't really have a context or a space to make art within the institutions, you know? I realized also that when you see kids who just go to the streets with a spray paint can, often these kids are from, you know, relatively low-income families, from, you know, poor neighborhoods, and they don't really have access to fancy art programs or within their high schools. They don't really have, you know, musical instruments, or they, and so the only way for them to express themselves is the street, and that's very interesting. Yeah, I guess there are many very interesting things about street art that you don't really think about when you start doing it. Because when you start doing it, it's spontaneous.
Yeah.
Okay, I have this idea, I don't know what to do with it, how about I put it up in the street? And then after that, you realize how fascinating it is as a process. Because, first of all, you're kind of anonymous. Your 12 friends know who you are. But, you know, the thousands walking in the street, they have no idea who you are.
Okay.
And so when you put up a poster or a statement or an image or a photo or whatever you do, when you use, I don't know, when you make a graffiti, the people who interact with it don't know your gender necessarily, they don't know your age, they don't know your social background, they don't know if you're academically trained or not, you know, they don't know, they don't know anything about you. And so when they interact with that piece, it's a very objective process. It becomes about the piece itself, about, you know, the message itself. That's on one hand, from the perspective of the public in the streets. Now, from the perspective of the artists, it's also really interesting, because when you know, when you feel kind of anonymous, and you don't really have, you know, to be approved by anyone or to be, you know, validated, you just allow yourself to do whatever you want. And that's really awesome, because you have this freedom. And I think that's also one reason that made it easier for me, I don't know for other people, but definitely for me, to go to the streets rather than go to galleries, is that, well, you don't really need to fill paperwork, you don't need to write the grant, you don't need approval, you don't need, you know, you just do what you want, in a sense. And, you know, what was interesting is that one of the first things I did was the fuck yoga thing. And so basically it's this cute little girl, and she has a skirt, and her skirt says, you know, fuck yoga, smash the state.
Yeah.
And see, like, the interesting thing about it is that it's definitely a collective process. And so I've been talking with friends about, we've been thinking about doing something about yoga in the street for a year. And when it happened, the reaction was very striking. Because, you know, you're starting some sort of a dialogue with people. You're like, okay, fuck yoga, smash the state. What do you say? And a lot of people were offended. I find it amusing, because it's not meant to be offensive, really. It's meant to be funny. The questions I address often are gentrification, the process of gentrification, and then colonization. Most of these pieces actually question comfort and privilege. And the idea behind it is that, okay, there are many things that are not pretty around us. There are many things that are questionable. And our lifestyle is based on those things. Let's think about it. I don't have any answers. I'm just trying to engage in a dialogue. So the fuck yoga, smash the state is just, you know, in gentrified areas, one of the first things that you start seeing is your overpriced yoga studios.
Yeah.
It's a fact. And if you go to a low-income, you know, neighborhood, the families don't do yoga because they don't necessarily have the financial situation for that. They don't necessarily have the time. You know, the way, I'm not an academic, but the way, so I don't really have statistics about gentrification or numbers or maps or any of that. But I feel it with my, you know, emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So when you walk in an area like St. Henry, and you walk in through these really, you know, poor areas, and then all of a sudden you're in, you know, condo dreamland, and mm-hmm. there's yoga studios all over the place and overpriced coffee shops. You know, it's a brutal process. It is. And so that's what Fuck Yoga Smash the State is about. Actually, it's more about smashing the state than about, you know, bashing yoga. I have nothing against yoga, but I have something to say against yoga as it's practiced within a colonial context, within a context of gentrification. I have something to say when, you know, you have a minority of people who have access to a lot of comfort and privilege, and then a majority of people who don't have access even to the basic things. That's more how I see it.
You were talking earlier about how through street art it's anonymous. Do you feel that distancing the artist from the art in that way kind of helps create more dialogue?
In a sense where people are not, don't have expectations, right? Mm-hmm. Because when people know, like, I guess in a more traditional kind of interaction, in a context of a gallery or in, you know, people have expectations based on a set of parameters, right? When you do things in the street, you know, it's as if you kind of stopped existing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when you see something, when you see a wheat pasted poster, or when you see you know, a graffiti, you don't, I personally, when I see, you know, street art, I don't think of, oh, you know, what does the person look like? Who are they? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I just think about the piece itself, mm-hmm. which is, I think, really awesome, in a sense.
So how would you compare, or would you even compare, perhaps more formal art institutions such as galleries to street art as a venue?
I don't think about contrasting them really, because I guess, you know, both exist, right? Like, it's two different mediums and they play their roles within society. Mm-hmm. I don't try to oppose them. I don't try to say, oh, this versus this, right. Because it's not, to me, it's not exactly the same, mm-hmm. you know, thing. I would see them as kind of going beside each other, you know? Especially if the priorities are similar, right? The way I see it is, you know, all venues are good for all messages. You know, there was a show this... When was it? I think this spring. Yeah, this spring there was a show at this Skull Gallery. Mm-hmm. And the first thing, it was called Promiscuous Infrastructures. Mm-hmm. And by the... Artivistic collective, and the first thing you saw when you went into the gallery was a huge message of fuck Harper, these two words. And I thought it was pretty awesome to have such a, you know, unnuanced kind of direct statement in an art gallery.
Yeah.
I think it's possible to do anything or to say anything within, you know, a traditional art space as well as within the streets. Mm-hmm. Now, what is, you know, interesting about the streets, once again, is that the fact that you reach so many more people, right? Because not all people go to galleries.
Yeah.
Yeah, but both coexist and both can play the same role in just different ways.
You're listening to Dragon Root Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM, Tuesday morning after. You just heard local Montreal street artist Harpy, and before that we heard Toronto-based illustrator Nestle. I'd like to thank our guests on today's show, and be sure to tune in next week for more reports on gender-based issues.